This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
The Senate is adjourned. Sine die.
As the motion's agreed to, the House is adjourned. Sine die.
The 2017 legislative session, void of Governor Rick Scott's priorities, is officially over. Will Governor Scott veto the $82.4 billion budget? When it comes to truth in accounting, why is Florida still $9.9 billion in debt, despite a balanced budget?
Too often, budgets are just done, you know, and they say, we balanced our budget, but people really don't know, you know, how did you calculate that? People don't ask how they calculated it.
We ask Sheila Weinberg, founder of Truth in Accounting.
Unfunded pension plans, their liabilities continue to increase.
The verdict is in.
Better fight it, Corrine.
Former U.S. Representative Corrine Brown could spend the rest of her life in jail.
What do you want to say to the children from One Door for Education?
Ma'am, let her through.
All that and more coming up on episode 106 of The Rotunda.
As you know, the president tweeted today that James Comey, in his words, better hope there are no tapes of their conversations.
What a chaotic week. We're not even going to touch the Trump administration this week. We'll focus this episode, this abbreviated episode, on Florida. And with that, it's a wrap.
Senate adjourned, sine die.
All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say no. The Senate is...
The 2017 legislative session has come to a close. As usual, promises were made, some promises were kept, and some of the most important issues were crammed into the last week of session. I've always wondered, why do they always wait until the last minute to deal with the most important issue? You have 60 days, but it comes down to the last week, each time. But it's a celebration at the end. Either way, let's hear from Senate President Joe Negron and House Speaker Richard Corcoran after the traditional drop of the handkerchiefs.
My colleagues in the Florida House of Representatives, for 20 years, people talked about, studied, went to meetings, had consortiums and collaborations about doing something for Southern Storage with Lake Okeechobee to stop the billions of gallons of discharges that destroy the coast on both east and west of Lake Okeechobee. And history will record that this legislature not only acted, but we funded to have Southern Storage so that we can stop and then ultimately completely get rid of all of the discharges that come from Lake Okeechobee. So, Speaker, thank you, and thank you to the House for making that happen. I appreciate it. And secondly, I want to thank my colleagues in the Senate and thank the Speaker in the House that we set a goal to transform our universities into world-class destination universities like the University of Virginia and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And with the budget that we passed and with the policy changes that we have made, we have almost $600 million in additional funding for our universities and also for need-based and merit-based aid. And I want all the parents around Florida to know that this legislature restored Bright Futures to 100% of tuition and fees and $300 a semester for books. So thank you for making that happen. I'd now like to turn the microphone over to the Speaker of the House, Richard Corcoran.
Thank you. I'd just like to also thank all my colleagues in the House. We did a tremendous amount of legislation in a bipartisan fashion, and thanks for working with us. I'd also like to thank Senator President Negron, President-designate Galvano, President-designate Wilton Simpson. They've been fantastic to work with throughout the entire process, as well as the entire Senate. I think that we set out to have a very bold, transformative agenda, and I don't think there's anyone, you can read any paper, any blog, any statement, and there's no question that what we accomplished was bold, transformative, and life-changing for the Floridians, and we're very, very proud of it, and it's an honor to serve the people of Florida, and we're very thankful for such a great session. Thank you very much.
Looming over this moment is Governor Rick Scott, who holds the power to veto individual items in the budget or scrap the entire thing as a show of force against a branch of government that has ignored all of his wishes. So what do you think, given that Scott is likely positioning himself to run for Senate? Vetoing the budget and having the legislature issue an override would be just another slap in his face by his own doing. It almost seems like using a heavy hand to his line item veto power might be a safe way to go, by zeroing in on his adversaries, mainly House Speaker Richard Corcoran.
Yeah, I think it's more likely that he would veto projects, and I've always told you, when there's pork in the budget, my encouragement to the governor is go veto all the pork you possibly can. I think he'll look at some of the other bills, but that's up to him. I think all of the bills that we pass.
But through it all, Scott has found himself with some unusual allies calling for a complete veto. The First Amendment Foundation, which has gone through many battles against Scott, is now calling on him to nix the budget. The League of Women Voters and the Florida Education Association are also calling for the same. So we're all waiting to see what Scott will do, and this goes to show, in politics, an enemy today could very well be a friend tomorrow. This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. This is an abbreviated episode this week as we prepare to hit the campaign trail, where you will be hearing from all of the top candidates running for some of the most high-profile seats in the Sunshine State. Stay tuned and always check out rotundapodcast.com for updates on the trail. So with Florida poised to enact its $82.4 billion balanced budget, would you believe that the state is still $9.9 billion in debt? Yes, I'm also confused. Well, this information comes from the financial think tank, Truth in Accounting.
Sheila Weinberg, I am the founder and CEO of Truth in Accounting.
Sheila Weinberg was available by phone and is here to discuss why it would take about $1,600 from every Florida taxpayer to bail us out of this debt.
All right. Well, Sheila Weinberg, thank you for joining me here on The Rotunda. When it comes to Florida's finances, we just ended our legislative session where we set the budget for the next fiscal year. $82.4 billion budget was passed by our legislature, and it's up in the air as to whether it will go through and if the governor will veto it and adjust it to his liking if he can. So where's our financial picture for Florida?
Well, overall, we've calculated, looking at your audited financial report, and calculated that Florida needs $9.9 billion to pay the bills that it's already accumulated. And if you divide that unfunded debt by the number of taxpayers, it's $1,600 per taxpayer. So that $1,600 is the amount that each taxpayer would have to send to the state capitol in order to get the bills just back to zero. And what we find is that, you know, your state, like 48 other states, have a balanced budget requirement, yet your debt continues to increase, even though theoretically you're balancing.
This is confusing. Like lawmakers, many lawmakers tout, oh, we have a balanced budget. We're different than Washington. We don't want to be like anything in Washington, which is accumulating all of this debt, and it's in disarray. So how are we still in debt with regards to the balanced budget, if you can help really get down to the meat of it all?
Well, what we found, for example, between 2014 and 15, we're looking at relatively old numbers, but they're new numbers for governments. Between those 2 years, for example, your pension liability in your state went up by almost $4 billion. And your retiree health care benefits, unfunded retiree health care benefits, went up by another $1 billion. So even though you, quote, balanced your budget, these unfunded pension plans, their liabilities continue to increase.
What's causing this, and why is it being missed?
Well, one reason it was being missed was because previously governments were able to, they were required not to put their pension liability on the face of their balance sheet. It wasn't until 2015 that they had to report these numbers. And they still do not have to report the $9.9 billion that they owe, $8.2 billion that they owe to their retiree health care benefits, the employees for those retiree health care. And the state is putting, the pensions, they might have money set aside to fund those pensions, some money, but not enough. But in the case of the retiree health care benefits, the state has very little assets to fund those. So it's going to be future taxpayers are going to have to pay for those benefits. So the easy way to explain it is if George worked for the state, he retires, and then you have to, as a taxpayer, when he retires, pay for his health care benefits. Well, George isn't working for me right now. So why should those taxpayers have to pay for his benefits?
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, chatting with Sheila Weinberg, the founder of the financial think tank Truth in Accounting, who's breaking down how Florida's finances are calculated.
So you guys are grading Florida's financial picture. You're giving it a grade of a C, and you point out that the financial data is skewed. That's why it's showing that we're in debt. What's the best way to get out of this situation?
Well, one, we believe that you should change how you do your budgeting so that, budgeting takes into all of the expenses that you have, including these pension and retiree health care benefits. And it only includes revenues that you earn in a current year. Too often, budgets are just done, and they say, hey, we balanced our budget, but people really don't know, how did you calculate that? People don't ask how they calculated it. So, I could tell you I balanced my budget, but, not include all of the costs that I put on my credit card. And that's what the state's been doing for years, is putting their pension and retiree health care benefits on taxpayers' credit cards. First step, let's go ahead and be truthful and transparent during the budget process. How is that calculated? And if this budget passes, how much debt will we be in? Will we be in less debt or more debt?
What do you say to folks who may question how you've calculated this data and they don't agree with your findings? Like, what do you say to your critics with this grade for Florida?
Well, the grade is based upon, again, they're saying that they balanced the budget. So, we're sort of like, we're actually giving Florida, the benefit of the doubt. We initially were going to have anybody who had what we call a taxpayer burden of zero or of more than zero, we were going to give a D or F to, because, again, our passing grade was based upon, did they pass the criteria that they were balancing their budget over the years? And no, because otherwise they wouldn't have a taxpayer burden. The numbers, we use the state's audited financial statements, and then all we do is add the off-balance sheet pension and retiree health care benefits to that, again, which are state numbers. And we do not adjust. Some organizations will adjust the numbers and increase the pension numbers to adjust for a lower rate of return. But we do not do that. We just use the state's numbers.
What do you hope that the state will do with this information? I imagine you've been doing this for several years. I've looked back and I saw previous reports and the numbers have changed. I don't know if the trend is going in a better direction from previous years. Like, are we moving towards a healthier picture in getting rid of this debt?
Well, you can go to you and your listeners can go to our statedatalab.org and click on your state, and you will see a chart that says, here's how much taxpayer burden we've had in prior years, and here's, the current amount. The highest amount was obviously during the recession. So you had a $2,900 amount in 2010. 2014, you got that down to only $1,100, kept that amount in 2015. But then last year, unfortunately, you started lagging behind again. Your $500 more per taxpayer last year. So you were doing better, but now things are getting a little bit worse as those pension and retiree healthcare benefits have increased.
And that's the burden to the actual taxpayer, like that $1,600.
Yeah, that's the per taxpayer burden there. So people need to be aware that, again, they're telling you they balanced their budget, but this debt continues to increase.
Well, thank you so much for taking this time to speak with me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks to Sheila Weinberg with Truth in Accounting. To learn more about this report, visit truthinaccounting.org. And if you have any comments or questions about this interview, contact us by visiting rotundapodcast.com. Last week, we featured Florida Times Union reporter Nate Monroe, who was in the courtroom for the fraud trial of former U.S. Congresswoman Corinne Brown.
She is facing a number of fraud and tax charges related to One Door for Education, which is a sham nonprofit.
The verdict is in.
Former Congresswoman Corinne Brown is now convicted of 18 felonies after decades of public service.
Former U.S. Representative Corinne Brown could spend the rest of her life in prison after being found guilty of taking money from a charity that was purported to be giving scholarships to disadvantaged youths. Brown is 70 years old.
And prosecutors say that this nonprofit, instead of being a charity that helped needy kids, was essentially a slush fund that that her chief of staff and his girlfriend and that the congresswoman essentially lived on for several years.
Brown was convicted of 18 of the 22 charges against her, including lying on her taxes and on her congressional financial disclosure forms.
Prosecutors have said that the drive was that she has simply developed a taste for luxury, that she was trying to live beyond her means.
It could very well be a long time before we see the specifics to Brown's punishment in the legal system, whether she spends the rest of her life in jail, some, or none at all. This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes. Visit rotundapodcast.com, follow us on social media at Rotunda Podcast, and dig deep by supporting this program. Yes, you can send in your generous contribution of any amount by visiting rotundapodcast.com. Go to the top right-hand corner and click donate. And as always, thanks for your support. As we wrap up, Florida Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam made his intentions clear with a big announcement in his hometown of Bartow, Florida.
I can't imagine a better place to announce that I am running for governor of the state of Florida.
Again, we will be tracking Putnam, Graham, Gillum, King, Scott, Corcoran, Latvala, Nelson, and all the others playing musical chairs in Florida politics. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Remember to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can also send in your contributions to this program. We want to hear from you with your tips, questions, or concerns. Be sure to join us right here next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.